It's Monday. You're watching the Gab and Jules show, and it feels like it's rained for the past 96 hours straight, but that's okay, because to brighten up our lives, we have a tremendous weekend of football to look back on, some huge results. We'll be talking Barcelona later. We'll be talking Liverpool. We'll be talking that poor show at Old Trafford at the top. We probably won't be talking too many transfers because the transfer window is still open. Yes, yeah. Magic of Television. We'll look back on this on Thursday. But Jules, you're wondering why these cakes are here. It was somebody's birthday. Yes, that's right. Happy birthday, Jules.
Thank you very much. I turned 40 on Sunday and I feel really blessed. And thank you for all the messages, including yours, Gab, and also producer Freddie.
This is where it all goes downhill. Anyway, nobody cares about your birthday as much, certainly not as much as they do about Jose Mourinho going back to Old Trafford against his old club and whooping the backside of the man who replaced him, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Jules, going into this, I looked at it and I said, all right, look, United needed a result. Spurs have played 58 games in 3 hours, seemingly, because of this crazy schedule. I had United as favorites.
Yeah.
But I didn't count on Bay and Maguire and the rest of that.
No, and usually in those games, because they're two teams that are much better on the counter-attack, really, that's where they're very good. They can punish you so quickly in transition. You thought, okay, the team that will take the lead first then can sit a bit deeper, I guess, and hit the counter and be really good. So when I see United scoring after 30 seconds, that penalty, I think, okay, now this is playing into their hands because they're going to make it more safe, more secure defensively, and then they will have Rashford and Greenwood and Martial and Pogba and Bruno hitting the ball through. And so perfect.
Especially against that Spurs midfield, which doesn't even have Lo Celso in there to go and illuminate things and create zero creativity there, right?
True. So I thought, okay, this is perfect. But what I didn't think of, what I forgot, is that Harry Maguire cost you £80 million. And that for £80 million, he cannot even defend for the sake of him. Because that first goal, that Ndombele goal, has to be the worst piece of defending that you've ever seen in your life, ever.
Worse than Eric Bailly falling asleep?
No, but come on. At some point, Harry Maguire even pulls off his own teammate in Luke Shaw, who's about to kick the ball really far into the M62 or whatever, the motorway by Old Trafford. And instead, he makes Luke Shaw falls over, which means that Ndombele can score. Man, I thought last season, Maguire, especially after the restart, looked really shaky and wrong. And that game against Southampton at Old Trafford, where he man-marked his own player on the corner, that led to the Southampton second. I was like, what's going on? But this is another level. This is like Sunday morning level.
I don't want to just make this about United and their deficiencies, although I think we have to point out that Luke Shaw foul at the end. I don't care if the rules say, well, it should have been yellow, whatever. That is the kind of foul which I think they should look at with video evidence and fine him or something, or at least make more of a spectacle out of it. That is the kind of foul that players used to do when their team was losing and the fans were on their back to show that, oh, look, I'm still trying. I have heart. I got myself sent off. That this is the kind of crap that we saw back in the 70s and 80s. Luke Shaw, by all accounts, is a very nice guy. I'm sure he feels terrible. I'm not going to harp on about this.
But did you see the reaction from Solskjaer? There's an angle on the television where you see Solskjaer and Mourinho behind. So you're facing the United player, the Spurs player. And so even Solskjaer goes, like, why did he do this? Why? It's his own player. And he goes like, oh my God, why are you doing this?
I know we're supposed to go and pile on Lamela and telling him he's a cheating foreigner and everything for getting Martial sent off. But we both agree they should both have gone, yeah?
Yeah, both have gone.
Okay, fair enough. So let's move on, because I want to save some time to celebrate Jose Mourinho, because we've been very harsh critics.
Yeah,
But he played a blinder here.
He played the blinder, and I think you said there was no Celso, less creativity, but I think this is Højbjerg's best position. If you play Sissoko and Ndombele, or two players around him, instead of just having him sitting with wings or him sitting with someone else, I don't think he feels as comfortable to go and chase the ball, to go and do the running, and then just when he gets the ball back, just pass it to Sissoko and Ndombele or Son or Kane or whoever you want. But I think when it's just the two in midfield with him, he's not as comfortable as a midfield three. And I think, in this Spurs setup, and the way they play. So I thought Højbjerg was perfect. And then, Kane in that kind of form and Son taking advantage of so much bad defending is, it's a blessing for them.
I, I want to just talk a little bit more about the Spurs midfield, because I thought they did a really good job in effectively taking Pogba and Bruno Fernandes out of the game. Now, I know Bruno Fernandes is still in media darling phase because of all his penalties and stuff, whereas, you know, Pogba is always the bad guy and it's always his fault.
I mean, he was bad.
But yeah,
I've defended him all his life.
No, what I'm saying is they were both poor, but yeah. I think a lot of it had to do with the way Spurs set up in midfield. And I know that Kane and Son will get the headlines, and rightly so, but I thought tactically the way he set them up, and you know, once you take those two guys out of the game, you're not going to get much from Shaw and Wan-Bissaka. Once they go down to 10 men, you know, the United strikers are service dependent strikers, and once you look who's on the bench, yes, there's Donny van de Beek, but for whatever reason he doesn't send them on until the end. Do you get that?
No.
Should he have seen that? Should he have said, you know what, if they're going to set up this way, let's bring in another passer? I mean, I suppose he would have done that if Martial hadn't been set off.
Yeah, I think the sending off changes a lot of things. But I think he never had another plan. There was no plan B once we clearly saw that Pogba and Bruno were off the game. I mean, he took Bruno off at half time. And you know, brought Fred. But I don't even know what to say. What I wanted to say about Spurs and Jose is that stormy relationship with Ndombele, and we know he might still kick off at some point and they might argue again, but there was a time where they could not see each other anymore. They didn't talk to each other anymore. And I think the way that both of them have worked out that relationship again, to trust each other again, the way Jose has brought Ndombele back, and clearly his attitude has changed massively because he's working hard, he's running, and I think that's a lot of credit for Jose.
Wonder if we'll see something similar with Dele Alli. Podcast listeners or TV viewers have gone away, but we're going to be with you a little while longer to delve a little bit deeper into this situation. Jules, in terms of media reaction, it seems to me that people are pointing fingers at Solskjaer, majority of people pointing fingers at Woodward. We're kind of going after old ground. As I mentioned earlier, the transfer window's still open. Cavani and Tejas could be on his way. No point speculating now. Let's speculate later about whether they can improve things. But I'm interested in this notion going into the season that you have Maguire and you have Lindelof as your starting central defenders, and everybody else has hardly played, right? Bailly, I think he started one game last season. Twanzebe, you know, Phil Jones. And then they decide that Smalling, who was really good last year, albeit at Roma, he's gone. There's got to come a point where you go to where you know, Solskjaer voiced his issues about depth and alternatives. I'm stuck in two minds about this. You're the manager. So at some point, you don't go and voice your concerns now in public with days left. You need to have the intestinal fortitude to say, you know what? Nobody likes Ed Woodward. Ed Woodward gets blamed for everything. Yep. If I go out in the summer, and I don't like it when managers do this, when there is a serious club there with a proven track record. But I think sometimes it is fair to throw your toys out of the pram, Conte style, or Mourinho style, or Van Gaal style, and say, guys, you're asking me to go into the season where all my backups are guys who basically haven't played football in the last 12 months or have played it very, very badly. I mean, could that have changed things? Is this something Solskjaer should have done? Because in the summer, Solskjaer still had
credit.
Maybe
he did. We don't know. Maybe he didn't.
No. In public.
Yeah.
In public. That's what I'm talking about. Calling it out. In private, I don't know. Maybe he did and, you know, he had lots
of
talks with Woodward.
He should have had. But maybe, you know what? Maybe he was happy. Maybe he was convinced that he didn't. Maybe he thought, you know what? Last season, we finished third best defense in the league, which is true. They finished third best defense in the Premier League last season. And maybe he saw that and thought, okay, well, we must have a good defense then. Third best defense in the league, that's good. And maybe he never thought, okay, let's try to find a way of improving these defensive records, having a better back four or back five or whatever he wants. And maybe he never saw it like this. But I find it baffling that at no point this summer they thought, do you know what, really, centre-back should be the one where we pull, you know, all our energy, all our money, everything you want to, all our efforts to go and sign a really, really good centre-back who will be better than what we have, even better than Maguire if you want, better than anyone else. Maybe by two even. And by another left-back, by the way, too. Okay. I just find that incredible. I saw Skew as a manager, whether he did it publicly or not, and yet he defended Wood with far too much, in my opinion, all summer. But that's what he chose. And maybe that's that kind of guy he is, but I don't know. But how come you never thought this is not good enough defensively?
So Phil Jones will leave to one side, but Eric Bailly was a very highly rated defender when he joined Manchester United. I don't know if he was worth 40 million or whatever. He suffered some very bad injuries since then. Is this the reason why he's not being the player, or he isn't turning into the player that he was supposed to become? Or is he just not being well coached? Because I don't remember him ever, other than a couple games, I don't remember even before he got injured.
Yeah.
You know, under Mourinho, I don't remember him playing well.
I don't know what happened with Mourinho. You know, maybe he just took a long time to adapt. Maybe the team, maybe he was, there was lacking something to come here to the Premier League and adapt his game. Maybe the coaching from Mourinho, who clearly was not at his best in those United years, especially the second one. I don't know what happened, because I just think that physically he has all the attributes, really. I think he's quite an intelligent guy. I think he can understand the game. His positioning was not that bad.
Does he still have those attributes, or is he just not the same after his injury?
Oh yeah, maybe he's struggling with the fitness. Yeah, maybe he is. Maybe he's struggling.
I look at Mourinho, and I'm wondering, a friend of mine who's a big Spurs fan says, you know what? I don't want Bale to get fit. I'm happy with what we have up there.
But if you change Bale for Lamela, how different could it be? It's just you've got.
Well, you'd have a guy who just walks around and plays golf. No, just kidding. But you presumably wouldn't change Bale for Lamela. Presumably, you would still have Son, Kane, Lucas Moura, and then you would have room in the midfield for Lo Celso, who hasn't become a bad player. He's obviously had his injuries or whatever, not fully fit. And then you have Lo Celso, Højbjerg, and Winks. And maybe you play Lo Celso deeper in the three, and then you just...
Whoa, hang on.
Okay, maybe forget Winks. Okay.
Yeah.
But so
why don't you want to change the system from Sunday? Keep that 4-3-3. I mean, I know Lo Celso has been good, and I think Mourinho loves Lo Celso. But I think if you've got...
Because when you play teams that park the bus...
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You need to have somebody who can pass the ball creatively.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you either...
I thought more in the spirit of those big games, like the one on Sunday against United, not the ones against...
Like big games, you know, he can go back to his 8-1-1 formation. I don't care. You know, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, but then you play Bale on the right, and then Son on the left, and Kane, and then you've got...
Yeah, and then you don't press, and everybody's...
You've got someone like, you know, as much pace as Bale that I think could help you even more in that kind of tactics.
To be honest, we don't know. We have zero idea what condition Bale is in,
what condition
he will be in. Presumably he's back after the break, but you know, that's a big question mark. I'm guessing, I still don't see Spurs finishing top four as of now. I stand to be corrected. When facts change, opinions change. But what would define success for Mourinho this season? I mean, given that somehow they finished fifth last year.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite a feat by him, despite everything. And I look at them this year and I say, I love that Aguilón signing, but beyond that, I don't know that they're much better, are they?
We will see. I think we will see. I thought after the restart, we saw at times the more problematic approach that they could have to the game. And I thought, okay, if they pick that up and move it to next season. I've always thought that Kane was a wonderful number 10 as well as a wonderful number 9, and that could work really well for them.
And is better this year than he was last year or the year before. I don't care about goal numbers or whatever. Kane
in which
had
way you
a
think
dip in terms of the contribution he makes to the team.
Yeah.
I think he's back to the level he was at 3 years ago.
Yeah, but if you allow him to play a bit deeper, which is not what Poch was doing at all, or very rarely, then if you allow for him to drop a little bit more, then...
He can play the wingers and everything.
He can have a better impact. What I think is interesting, from what you were saying earlier, I think if you finish top four and don't win a trophy, if you're Spurs, that's a good season.
It's a tremendous season. Yeah, no
If
question.
You don't finish top four, but you win a title, like an FA Cup or a League Cup or Champions League or a Europa League in that case, sorry, it's still a success, because I think they haven't won for so long that if he brings silverware to this club, even with no Champions League in the season, this is a progress. And I think psychologically this could have a huge impact if they win the FA Cup for the seasons to come. But if you don't, it's one or the other, and anything in between I think is a failure season.
it's still, I think, a tough ask when you look at the other clubs, the way they spent resources and stuff. It's just so competitive to get it to the top four. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough of that, Jules. Time to move on to La Liga, where we had our first big clash of the season.
Indeed.
Barcelona against Sevilla. Let's talk to Sid Lowe, who joins us. Sid, people got excited over Barcelona's first two results. Look, 4-0 and 3-0 against Celta Vigo and whatnot. I kind of thought their results were much better than performances. I said, let's go and see them against a real team. We saw them against a real team. It finished 1-1. And I thought Barcelona were pretty fortunate to escape with a point. Am I being unfair here?
I think maybe you're being slightly unfair about the first two games, because I thought the performance against Villarreal was very good. Although that said, Villarreal were so poor that it was difficult to touch it. I thought the performance away at Celta Vigo was much better, given that this is a place that they hadn't won in 6 years, and I thought they were very good. I thought we saw things that we didn't see last season from Barcelona, the intensity, I think the sense of a kind of a collective mission, the sense that there was a structure to the team, albeit it's a structure that I still think has some very significant flaws in it. I think it leaves a huge hole in the middle of the pitch, but that's a broader issue perhaps as they move forward. But I think broadly speaking, you're right. And you know, my sense of last night, to put it in a single phrase, is that the game that was supposed to define whether or not Barcelona are genuinely any good showed us that Sevilla are.
That's a very good point. I mean, this is perfect. But it's not a surprise that Sevilla collectively are better than this Barca team with a new manager, with a different formation, etc.
Arguably,
right?
A better manager, too.
Yeah, a better manager. But I was a bit surprised, I have to say, Sid, about some of the substitutions that Ronald Koeman made, especially so early after just an hour, Ansu Fati coming on, Antoine Griezmann coming on, but we could touch on Griezmann a bit later as well. But to bring Trincao and Pedri, and I know it was the same against Celta Vigo, so maybe he sees something in Pedri and Trincao that I don't see right now. But I was a bit surprised, especially considering how good Fati had been since the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, Koeman said after the game that he felt that the team showed signs of fatigue, the fact that they played three games in a week had an impact. And obviously everyone else has as well in Spain, because it's been midweek games. But he seemed to think that there was a physical element to that. I think there is also a status thing here, which is that he has decided that both Trincao and Pedri are ahead of Dembélé, for example. He's decided that he wants to give them minutes and bring them through. Certainly what we saw from Pedri last season at Las Palmas was very impressive and does at least prompt us to think that he's going to be a very good player. That said, obviously, look, let's put this in context. It was at Las Palmas in the second division. It's not the same as playing for Barcelona. And I thought, I'm with you on that. I thought that was slightly strange. I thought that it didn't really shift the way that Barcelona were set up in any meaningful way. I think this 4-2-4 formation that they've got, I think has problems. I think it's not perfect by any means, but Koeman is quite clear on this and he's quite direct about it. I also wonder, to be perfectly honest with you, whether it makes a difference that today is October the 5th and it's the final day of the transfer window. I think once the transfer window's closed, if Dembélé is still there, then we might see a slight shift in the order of those substitutions. I think we might see Dembélé start to play if he's still there.
All right, let's talk about Sevilla, because we don't want to give them short shrift here. to me, they look like they could be, they are, the third force, maybe even the second force, in La Liga this season. We've spoken about Ocampos, Jordan. I thought Koundé was really, really good at the back.
Yeah,
2020 has been weird for many reasons. Could this be the year that Sevilla win the title? Do you want to give me percentages? We did percentages for Atletico Madrid, but I feel like we need to do them for we need to put Sevilla in the percentages too.
I don't know how to put a percentage on it for you, but I do think that, you know, as I said before, that this was the game that was due to test Barcelona, which of course is in itself a recognition of the fact that Sevilla are a very good side. I was looking at it earlier. I think it's 26 games, only one defeat in those 26 games. And of course, that's in extra time against Bayern Munich, that this is a team. And in this sense, by the way, we're judging Barcelona against a team that knows exactly what it's doing, that's already made. Barcelona is still a work in progress. It's still in the middle of a process that's got, I think, a very long way to go. Whereas Sevilla are relatively stable. There's a couple of additions to the team. Of course, the departure of Reguilón means Acuña coming in at left back, and the departure of Banega means Ivan Rakitic.
Those are two pretty big departures, really, by the way. Those are two guys who were huge for them last year.
And they're not entirely like-for-like changes in that Banega and Rakitic, while Rakitic is clearly a very good player, he's a different type of player. But I think the ideas that Sevilla have, I think the sense of what it is they're trying to achieve is, I think, very clear and very well entrenched now, which obviously isn't the case with Barcelona. I guess, you know, you're asking for percentage. Maybe one way of putting it is to tell you what José Castro, the Sevilla president, said last night. And he said, look, we're talking about a league in which there are two or three teams with budgets much bigger than ours. And obviously that's Barcelona, Madrid and Atletico Madrid. And he said, but we have to have the ambition to try and win everything. And we have to be there in case there is a year in which those teams slip up. And I think Sevilla are very cautious about not saying this. They're very cautious about a slightly mixed message, which is you have to say we're ambitious for everything. You have to say we want to win everything. But no one is going to say, by the way, this year we can compete for the league. But I think privately they believe that in a strange season, in a season in which even Real Madrid, although they're top and although they haven't been beaten, don't entirely convince. Barcelona certainly don't. Atletico Madrid, let's see what happens with them. They've just had two 0-0 draws in a row. I think there is a belief that this is a year in which they could compete for this. Now, winning it personally, I think, is beyond them. But I think you're right that they're a challenger now.
Shades of Lazio last year, methinks. Now, Sid, I was thinking about this, actually, Jules. If I asked myself how many Sevilla players would get into this Barcelona lineup, if I was the manager...
If you were the manager, yeah.
Tell you what, I'd have Navas, maybe not last night's Navas. I'd have Koundé easily. Every he was day. A monster this weekend. I'd find room for Jordan in there somewhere. And the way Lucas Ocampos has been playing, although Souza was brilliant too. Yeah. Hey, you're excited, Jules.
I am, and I have to say, like Sid said, the momentum they had from last season as well, where they already put a very good unbeaten run together, plus the fact that the team... Okay, they lost two very important players, but it hasn't changed much. You know, usually Sevilla bring in 15 players and sell 15 players every summer, right? This summer has been a bit different. So the fact that you almost have the same squads and the same mentality with the result that you had last year with the Europa League and everything. For me, Jules Koundé is the perfect example of how great they've done in the last 12 months, because he was a really good player in France at Bordeaux. He was a young player. He had great potential. Everybody could tell you that. He'd been playing for the France youth teams, no problem. But to go to that level, I think Lopetegui and Sevilla as a club, Monchi and everyone around him have done an incredible job, because regardless of how big his potential was when he signed, I don't think that even himself could have seen him being that good just a year later.
You like that, Sid, right? You're on board with my Sevilla players who get into the Barca team, or am I getting carried away?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Koundé as well, I think Koundé is a great example, as you say, and he's a great example of the work that Sevilla do. Now, one of the things that I think we sometimes make the mistake of doing is we look at who Monchi signs and we look at how successful they become, and we talk about what a brilliant eye he's got for a signing, which he absolutely has. And actually, Koundé wasn't cheap. It was a little bit over 20 million euros, which for a club like Sevilla is a lot of money for a guy who I think was a 20 or maybe even a 19-year-old central defender at the time. And actually, he kind of got overlooked a little bit in the first half of the season, because Diego Carlos, so impressive, I mean, apart from the fact that Diego Carlos is, to use a Spanish phrase, a wardrobe. The guy is huge. And so he stands out. And, you know, it feels like everything is going to him. It feels like he's, you know, kind of bulldozing his way for everyone. And there was a moment earlier in the year, and I must confess, I can't remember when it was, but there was a conversation with someone saying to Monchi, I tell you what, that Diego Carlos is good. And Monchi turning around and saying, and what about the other guy? Because no one was really talking about Koundé at that stage. And bit by bit, Koundé found his feet. Now, the reason why I say I think we slightly misjudge it is because we look at this and we say, well, what a great signing. And what we don't look at is exactly that phrase you've just used, all the people around him. So Sevilla don't just sign players. They build a structure and an ecosystem that makes those players fit and feel comfortable and feel part of it. And so you get someone like Koundé, and even something as basic as how quickly he learned Spanish. You know, how quickly he feels like he's got people around him helping him out. How much of, an environmental job Sevilla do. And Monchi, I think, is massively important for that reason as well. He doesn't just buy the players and then says to the manager, there they are. He buys the players and he builds the ecosystem in which those players can succeed. And I think Koundé is a great example of that.
I think you're absolutely nailed it. When you look at the number of players, because, you know, before we talked about how, you know, Lopetegui's had more time than Koeman, which obviously he's had. But if you look at the turnover in players, you look at how many of these Sevilla players were at Sevilla even just 16 months ago, it's only going to be a couple. And that's pretty remarkable is how quickly that process goes. By the way, you mentioned Diego Carlos. We're going to move back to Barca for box office reasons. But when you mentioned the whole wardrobe thing, is Diego Carlos the reincarnation of the legendary Ballesteros? Is he going to become Ballesteros when he's older? Please tell me yes. That is the greatest YouTube clip in the history of Liga football, by the way. Find this. It's Ballesteros running 80 meters to beat Cristiano Ronaldo to a ball over the top. Everybody's seen this. This was like in the 91st minute of the game. Cristiano Ronaldo was 10 years younger than he is today. People point out, oh, but Cristiano was injured. Ballesteros is the size of a building, okay? I mean, seriously. He must be the biggest outfield player in the history of La Liga. So anyway, whatever. I digress. I love my Ballesteros.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they look, to be fair, on one level, I'd say yes, but on the other, they're the complete opposite in that you look at Diego Carlos, and while Diego Carlos is absolutely huge, he looks like he's supposed to be huge, if you see what I mean. He looks like how an athlete should look. He looks like a boxer. You know, he's got very broad shoulders. He's incredibly that, you know, his biceps are huge as well. You know, he looks like he could have a 35 letter long name and it would still fit across his shoulders. They're so broad. Whereas Ballesteros sort of didn't look like an athlete. That was the thing about Ballesteros. Yeah. Ballesteros was let's look at this from kind of comic book terms, right? Which is that Diego Carlos looks like a superhero.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, he looks like he should be in spandex. The muscles are bulging out. It's all very obvious. Ballesteros was a complete anti-hero. He looked like the bloke you see down the pub. He looked, yeah, but it just turned out that he had a neck 50 miles wide. Not so much the shoulders, the neck. That he was an ox. You know, he wasn't the classic athlete. But then, as you say, there's that brilliant footage of him. The other one that always made me laugh about Ballesteros was the story about him having a fight with Pepe. Now, it wasn't the fact that he had a fight with Pepe that made me laugh, but the story was that they had a fight in the medical room after Ballesteros had wiped someone out. And I can't remember if it was Cristiano or someone else. And so the story went, and this little detail made the whole thing funny for me, was that Ballesteros, standing there in just a towel, punched Pepe in the face. And I just love this idea that this is kind of the embodiment of what he's like. I'm wearing just a towel, but I'm still going to punch you in the face.
A very large towel, no doubt. Jules?
Of course. Yes. Please tell me that my boy Antoine Griezmann will be fine, Sid. Please tell me that they're going to find a way somehow to make him play better, to make him perform better, that himself will be a bit happier there, that he will find his feet in that team, wherever he plays. Please tell me that everything is going to be fine.
I can't tell you that because I don't know that.
Please.
I'd love to tell you that because I personally think that for 3, maybe 4 years, I use the collective we, I don't necessarily include myself, but I mean, we should do, I suppose. We massively underrated Antoine Griezmann. For 3 or 4 years, he was unbelievably brilliant in a team that didn't create much for him. He did everything for that Atletico team. I think his role in the French national team, both in the European Championships in 2016, the World Cup in 2018, was massively underrated as well. I think this was a guy who probably should have won the Ballon d'Or one of those 2 years, quite honestly. I think he's that good.
Yeah.
But at Barcelona, it hasn't happened. Now, it's not been as terrible as I think some people think, in the sense that, you know, last year he got a lot of kickings, and you look at how little criticism there was of Hazard and João Félix, to give the examples of the other new players at the other big clubs. Griezmann was far better than them. His goal scoring record last year is actually reasonably good, particularly in terms of the opening goal when it's really theoretically more difficult. But there is a sense of him not having a place in the team. Now, this year, in theory, and we've said this before, what are Griezmann's two positions? Right-hand side coming in or off the front? Or at least a false nine, right? I call it three positions.
Yeah.
Number 10 off the front, right-hand side or false nine. Those are Lionel Messi's three positions. And that, in a nutshell, is kind of part of the problem. If he is going to go run somewhere where there's space rather than run somewhere where there's traffic, he's going to have to go outside into a right-hand side channel, which isn't his natural position, even though he got a couple of chances in that position yesterday and actually didn't take either of them very well. And then there's an emotional process to all of this. You know, the sense of his own importance, the sense of the belief that players around him have in him. You know, there were conversations in his first season at Barcelona where Valverde was saying to him things like, look, how do you think your teammates feel about the fact that you did that video, that you didn't come, then you turn up a year later, that you turned up on a 120 million euro deal when they wanted Neymar? You have to go and absolutely put them in a position where no one can question you. And so far, we haven't seen that from him. And I think it's, as I say, let's go back to start. I think it's a pity because I think he's a brilliant footballer. But to be honest with you, I don't think he's in the right place.
Say, we're going to have to leave it there because we spent so much time talking about Ballesteros. But you know what? It was worth it because we'll be talking about Griezmann and Barca time and again.
It's always worth it.
Absolutely. Cheers, Sid. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sid.
Nice one. Cheerio. See you later.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, enough of all that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Liverpool suffered their worst defeat in a long, long, long time, going down to Aston Villa 7-2. Jules, is this just a blip, a bad day at the office, or are there deeper concerns?
I think it's both, Gab. I think it's a bad day at the office because everything went against them. I mean, they scored three shots deflected. They had Adrian in goal. They lost the ball in crazy position and things like
no
that.
No Mane, no Thiago. Let's keep making excuses.
No. It was a bad day at the office. Everything really went bad. Could have gone bad, went bad. However, there was issues, I thought, with the attitude of some of the players. I don't know what happened to Alexander-Arnold, but this is not him playing. I mean, the whole back four was terrible in the sense of the lack of stamina, the lack of even the way they played, just common sense at times. I thought they missed some chances as well. And Martinez,
Firmino's finishing, still not.
Yeah.
Martinez, still Firmino-like?
Great game in goal for Villa. I just thought it's a mix of two, but I think they will have to sort out a bit some of the attitude that we saw in that game yesterday, where they didn't want that game enough, and Villa wanted it more than them, and in the end, you get punished on that level.
There you go, Klopp. You get a pass.
Gab, I think we need to praise Villa too as well. Who's getting your love? Ollie Watkins for his hat-trick? Is it Jack Grealish, who had a really good game? Ross Barkley for his debut as well?
All of them. I thought they were decent defenders too, but out of those three, if you're holding a gun to my head, I'm going to say Jack Grealish. Look, when you look like that and you grow up in English football playing the way he does, I can imagine all these hard men calling you a fancy Dan and whatever else. The guy's a leader on the pitch. He may be imperfect, but the guy is tremendous. It's great that he's at a club like Aston Villa, once great club that could be great again one day, and I just love the fact that he didn't move on elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree.
Bayern needed four goals from Robert Lewandowski, including a stoppage-time penalty winner, to get the win against Hertha Berlin. Jules, time to celebrate or time to worry a little bit?
They were shaky defensively. Mm. Really shaky at times.
Really bad, more
really
than shaky.
Really bad, yeah, shaky, you're right. And thinking again, the balance of that team that we mentioned before doesn't look just right now with the midfield after losing Thiago and a few players, as we explained. They've got new players coming in. And let's hope that Flick can find that balance a bit stronger balance, because otherwise they're going to keep conceding and conceding chances and goals, and I don't think not every day they will have four goals Lewandowski and the 93rd minute to bail them out.
He totally saved them. Look, Alphonso Davies at left wing, not the same thing as Alphonso Davies left back. Looks like they're going to deal with their deficiencies by keeping Javi Martinez.
Yeah.
We saw Chris Richards at right back. Okay, but the guy's a central defender.
Yeah, that's not his position.
So, you know, I think still a ton of work to do.
Juventus were supposed to play Napoli in the big game in Serie A on Sunday night. They did not, and everybody got confused. Can you explain?
This is really confusing. Basically, you've got two conflicting versions of the rules. You have the rules laid out by the Italian league and agreed upon by the Italian national government, which say that if you have less than a certain number of positive cases, what you do, you go into what they call soft quarantine, which means that you go move into a hotel together. You can still train and you can still play games, but you can't go back to your homes. And then you have the local restrictions, which in Napoli, the local health service said after Napoli got their second case on Saturday, they were at the airport, they were on their way to Turin. They said, no, you can't travel. So they decided, oh, we're going to follow these rules instead of the national rules. This is going to end up in court, and theoretically, Juventus showed up at the stadium. Juventus followed the rules, so Juventus should be getting a 3-0 win by forfeit. But I'll tell you what, this is ending up in court. They need one rule for everybody and allow that to be the rule going forward. Otherwise, they're not going to finish the season. It's not just going to be a problem in Italy.
I'm really disappointed that Juve didn't say, you know what, we understand the situation. We understand that the local authorities don't let them fly or this and that. We'll postpone the game. They're bigger than this. They're bigger than
you can't postpone the game.
They could have said to the league, listen, we don't want to win. We don't want to win this game because they forfeited, because they're not turning
far
up.
Far be it for me.
It was a farce.
Far be it. It was a farce. I agree.
But Juve should have said something.
Far be it for me to defend Juve and Andrea Agnelli, but I think on this occasion they were correct. Zinedine Zidane goes back to playing wingers. Asensio and Vinicius and Real Madrid beat Levante 2-0. But Jules, he's not where he wants him to be yet, is he?
No, and they scored the second one really late, 95th minute, Karim Benzema on the counter-attack.
Courtois,
well,
man of the match.
Courtois, again, man of the match. We said that's the third time already in four games, in three games that he gets man of the match because he saved them again. Levante created far too many chances for a game against Real Madrid. You know, that's the point at the end, and I think Zidane was right at the end. He said we need to improve quickly. We're all excited when Atletico Madrid scored six goals in the opening game of the season against Granada, and now he's 2-0 in a row.
You can say normal service has resumed. This is not a good. This was a physical game against a tough opponent.
Bad.
Didn't take chances, but they created virtually nothing. So, Leeds United versus Manchester City was arguably the best game of the weekend. Jules, did you enjoy it as much as I did? And did you learn anything about Pep's new defenders?
It was fantastic. I thought it was great spectacle. I thought when City could closed down Calvin Phillips, they were on the up and they were clearly the better side. And as soon as Bielsa and Leeds found another way of, you know, bypassing the press that they could put on Calvin Phillips especially, then Leeds were so amazing. I really thought they were fantastic and probably deserved to win the game. I know Bielsa said the draw was a fair result. I don't know. And for Ruben Dias, I think we need to see him a bit more. But Mauer, those two fullbacks. I mean, that's Mendy and Walker, more than Ruben Dias, which is so bad.
That game was so much fun, so exciting to watch, so exhausting.
Yeah. Everton beat Brighton 4-2 and at top of the league now after with a three-point lead. Sorry, I can't believe we're only talking about them now. Gab, tell me that your pal Carlo Ancelotti turned Dominic Calvert-Lewin into an English version of Robert Lewandowski.
I like to think he's our pal. And look, I'm happy for him. He's obviously added some very good players in James Rodriguez and Alan, who was out at the weekend. He had some big players out this weekend, incidentally. I mean, tell you into something. He doesn't just work well with superstars. He can work well with younger players and with good players and hopefully help them turn into great players. But it's an incredible start for Everton. Borussia Dortmund rolled to a 4-0 win over Freiburg. No Jadon Sancho, no problem as Gio Reyna notches three assists and Erling Haaland scores two goals. Jules, who impressed you more?
Giovanni Reyna, I love you. I absolutely love you. I love how elegant you are. I love the way you play. I love your intelligence, your movement, how skillful you are. It's just so, you're silky. I just love it. I mean, Haaland could have had a hat-trick, and I love the assist at the end for Paslak, but
Haaland looks like Shrek.
Gio Reyna, I know. And Gio Reyna, you're beautiful. I love you. I love your family, your dad, everyone. One goal apiece and one red card apiece for Inter and Lazio, Gab, on Saturday. Who would be happier there and who's better at play acting? Is it at play acting, sorry, Vidal or Patrick?
Well, so look, I mean, first of all, Lazio will be happier because Inter once again squandering 2 points and they have the man advantage. Look, both of them play acting, but Vidal at least got whacked in the face by Ciro Immobile, and then he play acted. Patrick, that was ridiculous. He got Cincy sent off late on. Again, as bad as Lamela and thoroughly embarrassing. Arsenal took a while to get going, but eventually beat Sheffield United 2-1. Jules, Chris Wilder wasn't happy that the ref didn't show red when David Luiz pulled Oliver Burke's jersey. Would that have made all the difference in this game?
Well, if Arsenal had been down to 10 so early in the game, of course it would have made a difference. And I agree with Chris Wilder. That was a red card every day.
And a bad performance from Arsenal. Arteta going backwards?
No, not backwards. It's just like, you know, I think they're a bit struggling to get going at times. Frank Lampard mixes it up again with Callum Hudson-Odoi out wide and Jorginho in midfield, and they beat Crystal Palace 4-0, although there was 0-0 at halftime. Were you impressed?
I thought they were much better in the second half. Yeah, it makes more sense.
It was not difficult, though, to be better in the second half.
No, of course. But Crystal Palace, by the way, super defensive, and you know, once they get back in the game, they don't actually do anything.
Don't want to play.
I think they still have issues to sort out at the back. I don't think they're going to go too far with this setup. They need to work it out. Chilwell scored a nice goal. Jorginho, the two late penalties. I'm glad that they respected the hierarchy.
There's a list. You know.
Absolutely good for him to take. I don't know why Jorginho gets all this abuse, but hey, Kai Havertz, baby steps forward. Look, it's a long season. There's still a lot to figure out. Let's see what happens when Hakim Ziyech is fit as well.
I agree.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jose Anigo was always one of the more, shall we say, colorful figures in French football without getting us into trouble. Do some Googling, guys. But maybe we're not surprised by what happened to him at this weekend then.
You're right. He was arrested first and placed in custody and now has been charged for basically being really close to some mafia gangs in the south of France, in Marseille.
He's a former Marseille manager.
Sporting director, player as well. He played and now he's the Nottingham Forest sporting director here in the UK. As you said, always had rumours around him about things that he could have been doing, or at least people who were close to him, people he knew, his son also, who was murdered, I think, a few years ago by rival gangs in Marseille. And I think those links just caught up with him.
It was one of those things where he basically grew up with these people. And
yeah, exactly. You know,
it's kind of like those old movies where one guy becomes a cop and the other guy goes and becomes a gangster and some of his friends chose the other path.
Exactly. And I think because of the money that there is in football and what football is about, I think a lot of his friends have been very interested in the football world, if you want. So let's see what happens. It's not the first time he's been in trouble with the police and the justice. And you know, if he can prove that he hasn't done anything wrong and he was not guilty, then good on him, of course. But
Nottingham Forest just can't catch a break, right?
They can't. I mean, it's just, you know, it was always, I guess, appointing him was always a bit dangerous in a way because of that reputation. But I thought he did quite a good job with Sabri Lamouchi, and now I just don't know what can happen to him.
By the way, younger listeners, for those who don't know, Nottingham Forest, two-time European champions. I think I'm right in saying only Liverpool have won more, or have United won three?
United have won.
Oh, they have won three. Yeah, very much. Okay, fine. Only Liverpool and Manchester United have won more European Cups than Nottingham Forest.
Indeed. No Ibra, no Rebic, no problem for AC Milan, who beat Spezia 3-0 and go top of Serie A. Gab, the kids are all right, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, Spezia aren't very good. But
they haven't played anyone that great so far.
No, but
Crotone, Spezia, I mean, come on.
Well, Rio Ave, the greatest shootout, the greatest penalty shootout in the history of football.
That's true.
No, but I mean, they did have a bunch of injuries. This is basically, they have the youngest team in Serie A, certainly, I think, in terms of starting 11 in this lineup.
Yeah.
And they keep the momentum going. And they're top of the league. And I think this is important because they're getting buy-in. You know, look, it's great that Ibra's back, but they don't want to be an Ibra-dependent team. They want to show, they want to make sure that the kids grow. Spezia aren't very good, but this was one of those games, it's 0-0 at halftime, where you start getting a little bit frustrated, you rush things and whatever else, especially with younger players. And instead, they saw it out, and I thought they were deserved winners, and Stefano Pioli, top of the league.
And Rafael Leao, who had been criticised a little bit for his attitude by his manager recently, especially in the Europa League, two goals.
Yeah, two goals. And I think that's important too, because he is the natural centre forward. I mean, they've played Colombo, they've played, you know, they've tried different options, but he is the natural backup to Ibra. Paris Saint-Germain get themselves a new striker to replace Eric Choupo-Moting, and it's Moise Kean, or Moise Kean, depending what country he's in. Happy, Jules?
I'm very happy. I think he's got loads of talent, and he's a better addition than Choupo-Moting was, although he saved us against Atalanta in the Champions League. But I'm very happy with Moise Kean. Let's hope that he can hit the ground running.
Moise Kean, come on, man.
Atalanta do it again. They beat Cagliari 5-2 and have now scored four or more in each of the last three games. Gab, could they even be better than last year?
They're certainly deeper than last year. They haven't lost any of the enthusiasm. I'll tell you what. Only one team, this is a stat I heard on Italian television, so it may be entirely made up, but only one team in the big five leagues has ever scored four more goals in the three games to start the season. That team, Real Madrid from 1987 with Hugo Sanchez and La Quinta del Buitre, that is a standard, Atalanta, the goddess, La Dea, that is a standard that they're setting. Right, so we got time for this week. Thank you so much to join us. Jules, how about we come back on Thursday? We'll look back on the transfer window closing, look ahead to the internationals. Join us then, because we all we got, we all we need.